June Afternoon made possible with support from Sentinel Coffee, serving Southeast with locally roasted organic coffee and door-to-door delivery. More at sentinelcoffee.com. I'm Andy Klein, and our first guest here today on this edition of Juno Afternoon is going to be doing a fireside lecture tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Please welcome filmmaker Ben Hamilton. Ben, thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you're going to be talking – really, your kind of talk, it looks like, is something I think that a lot of people go through, trying to capture natural images and a lot of the challenges that come with that, both filmmaking and, I guess, photography as well.
For sure. I mean, tonight's lecture will be – it's about the Tongass and salmon, and it's coming from a filmmaker's perspective. We made a film in 2016 called The Salmon Forest, and I really want to take people behind the scenes of that film. But for even people who haven't seen that film who come to the lecture, we'll really be trying to just give them a window into the world of documentary travel filmmaking.
Yeah.
And hopefully get a little glimpse of some of the things that I may have gleaned from the Tongass and understand about it that maybe someone who doesn't get to be paid to go out and explore, you know.
Right. Where were the main areas where you did the filming of that?
So we filmed over the course of about 2 months, and we pretty much spanned the entire length of the Tongass. We started down on Prince of Wales, and we were based out of Thorne Bay there. We spent time in Ketchikan. We spent time on both Admiralty and Baranoff Island. And then we finished our trip in the north end of the Tongass in Icy Strait up into Glacier Bay. We were really the whole extent of the Tongass, and really the goal, or at least our approach to trying to tackle a question of how do you tell the story of salmon in the Tongass was, let's follow salmon on their journey,
right,
and let's meet the people along the way who really depend on them. And so the film has five sections. Each section really looks at a different angle of which people in the Tongass connect to salmon.
Are the five sections also divided among five species of salmon or
anything
like that?
No, it's really like each stage. So, you know, the first section of the film kind of begins as salmon are just getting back into the near waters off coast.
And were you following a specific – were you following reds or are you following king? Or
no,
just,
and we kind of see all of the different ones throughout the process.
Okay.
Now, given that we were filming between July – and August primarily, you know, we're mainly seeing chum, pink, and sockeye.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing too many kings, and coho are really later.
We do
see some coho in one of the sections, but the film is really about the people, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how the Tongass National Forest as a public land is really a value to our nation and to the world as a producer of salmon and not just – as, you know, a logging thing or something else, right? Like if this film looks at the Tongass as a public land holistically and tries mm-hmm. to say, well, what maybe we're missing this biggest thing that it's adding value
what
to.
What is its total benefit? What's its total role and benefit in that kind of idea?
Exactly. Yeah. And actually the idea for the film came from a guy named Ron Medell who used to work at the Forest Service. And he spent almost his life work creating a PowerPoint presentation that in, you know, his internal world was really to try to argue the actual financial value of salmon to the, you know, that the Tongass specifically
for
the forest, you
right.
know, which isn't a concept we often think of. Like,
we think of them as in the sea.
And, exactly.
Right, yeah,
and so
right.
it's kind of this question of like, well, could you put numbers to that? And he did. And so I've done work throughout the Tongass for about 10 years, and some folks at the Sitka Conservation Society as well as some folks at the Forest Service kind of put this, you know, document in front of me and said, you know, like what would this look like translating this into a film? And obviously we wanted to humanize these numbers. We wanted to put faces to them. But, you know, we wanted to show people that tourism, that the entirety of the wildlife ecosystem here, that – obviously the commercial fishing, you know, industry here, that the arts and culture here, that the lifestyle here, that everything is just interweaved with salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's interweaved with salmon, it's interweaved with the trees in the forest. So
this was done in 2014?
In 2016 we did production.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
I see. So is this a film that people can access? Is it available in some way?
Totally. Yeah. So the film plays throughout the Tongass actually at different venues. It plays on some of the boats, the tourist boats. It does play at, I believe it's called the Discovery Center in Ketchikan.
Okay.
And then it's available online at salmonforest.com.
And is it at the Mendenhall Visitor Center here as well?
They do not play it at the Visitor
okay.
Center.
Ironically.
The challenge with it, I think, is because it's 30 minutes with the tour boat, they only have these little windows
yeah.
of time.
Right.
But, you know, I definitely encourage people to see it if they can. And obviously, if you can come out tonight, they are playing the film at 5:15.
We've got a little clip of the film online, and that's under KTOO.org/JunoAfternoon. If you just look at today's photo, link there on the today's page, you'll be able to see that. So the one thing I wanted to get to was so awesome to hear about the entirety of that film. Do you then get specifically for the talk tonight? Are you talking about sort of is this sort of kind of for photography nerds? Is it for I guess it's for everyone, but are you going to get into the weeds a little bit about how to do techniques? Or?
Sure. I mean, like I go into, you know, I dive into some of the highlights, some of the things that I really took away. I also talk about some of the technical challenges with getting some of the shots. There's some specific stuff in the film that is really challenging to get. We used a cable cam system, for example, which is basically, you know, a three-axis gimbal that holds my camera on a line. We thread that through the forest so we could get these shots where we could connect the forest to the streams. And putting those up and you know, schlepping those through the forest a number of miles. And
is that stuff that today, even in the 3 years, you might do with drones instead of with cables?
It is, actually. Yeah. And it is and it isn't. You know, sometimes drones scare animals. In fact, a lot of the times drones scare animals. So, you know, when we actually shot this, the FAA had not changed their drone certification for commercial use to a, like, permittable, easy thing to get. You had to actually – I mean, it was extremely
– Yeah,
you had to get the full pilot license.
Right.
Right when we finished production, it was like in September, they came out with the FAA option for getting your Part 107. So I definitely would have used it for probably more aerials, but I have to say that you cannot get the slow shots. There's some in the trailer if you guys can check it out, and I'll talk about it tonight, that it is like butter smooth, super slow pans. And you can also just get really close to animals because it's very quiet and it's –
they just don't kind of notice it. Yeah, right.
You know, I'll talk a little bit tonight about, like, how do you get salmon spawning underwater? It's right. One of those things that it's taken me like a decade to figure out how to do. And I didn't even get what I would consider the amazing shot, which is the release on this film, even with dozens of hours in the field, just, you know, trying to get that shot. I've got quite a bit of bear footage for tonight too, to show. We shot out at Pack Creek, which is my second or third time out there, and some special moments with some bears out there that I'll share.
So what are some of the – tell me about, like, when you think back on, like, some of your number one challenges, technical challenges that happened during this shoot, or moments where you thought maybe, oh, no, something all is lost. Are there moments that you remember back on the shoot that kind of stand out?
Sure. I mean, obviously rain is just like a universal brutal thing in Southeast. One of the scenes in the film, I'm out fly fishing with a guide in Sitka, and I cannot express to you, it looks rainy in the shots and it looks terrible, but, you know, we were out there for 7 hours and I'm just in waders. I've got $100,000 of equipment that's just, you know, like I have rain gear for my camera, but it permeates at a certain level like any rain gear does. So, you know, I had to buy multiple backups of rain jackets that I would bring with me, and I would swap them throughout the day. That's always hard. You know, at Pack Creek, batteries and just media, we're shooting 4K for this. I'm shooting in an extremely high bit rate. And so, like, you know, when I shoot slow motion, especially for bears, I can go through easily a gig a minute. So, you know, you're talking like – it goes really, really quick.
Right.
You know, I mean, for example, this entire project was over 60 terabytes, you know, just
how is that stored within the cameras? Is it just on little
very expensive hundreds of cards? You know, I just have tons of them with me.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a technical challenge. One of the funniest, I would say, and most incredible moments of the entire trip was there's a hike you can do in Sitka called Gavin Hill, and it's right in town and it's one of the better hikes. And we got him to the top. And it was like we had 22 days of rain in a row. And then I'd been looking at the high pressure system like, all right, tomorrow's the blue day. We got to get up. So we bust up with all of our gear. We get up there and it's just like mind blowing, right? You can see all the way to Glacier Bay, it feels
right.
Like. So we're just shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting. The best single handed sunset I've ever seen in my entire life is up there. I forgot my fuel for my, you know, stove. So we're like, all right, we're not eating like pasta tonight.
Crunchy pasta,
yeah, right. You know. We're like pretty dehydrated at this point because we had been used to it being so cold, and all of a sudden it was like an 80-degree day. And then we woke up in the morning, and I had shot so much the night before because it was so amazing, and we were above the clouds completely. And so – and then the sun starts rising, and it's like 4 o'clock. And
above the kind of carpet of clouds.
Above the
thing.
Carpet,
yeah,
and it's
right.
Starting to come over the mountains in these like little ripples, and like – it was one of those moments where I didn't have the media left to shoot.
Right.
And so we shot as much as we could, and then the media ran out, and then we just sat there. And
you just had
like,
to watch it. You just had to enjoy
it. You had to enjoy it, which in my job is like kind of a rare thing, but it was a nice moment of the film.
That's cool. Yeah, right. But I'm sure in a way it's almost stressful, right?
Like oh, it's
you're sitting there
stressful.
Just going, oh, no, if only I'd had yeah. this, and this. Yeah, right.
Some of the other thing, one of the last days of my entire trip well, actually, I'll tell you, the without a hands-down hardest thing about the shoot was getting out with a commercial fisherman.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so busy. And when the opener happens, which is when we want the action, they don't want someone else on their boat. Especially this, we really wanted the small operators, you know. And for them, it's like some of them, their boats are so small, they don't even have one or two people on there, you know. And maybe they stay out for 4 days. So we finally got out on a boat in early September and – the guy was awesome, but it was a really short thing. And that night, we were going to fly out like the next day. And the guy I was renting my house from in Sitka came and banged on my door. He's like screaming. And my wife and I work together. So we're both there. And we wake up and we're just, get outside, get outside. You got to see the Aurora Borealis. And we ran outside. And I swear to you, it was the best Aurora Borealis, I think. I mean, after talking to people that they have seen in 20 years,
right.
And we started filming. I stayed up the entire night filming. None of it's in the film because why do I show Aurora
right.
Borealis in a Tongass film? It's so rare. I have some of the footage for tonight to share, but it was, you know, that was like a special moment in
That's
life.
That's cool. Yeah. You call Sitka home?
I don't. I actually live in Denver.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
But for this project, you were based out of Sitka?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've been coming up almost every year, and Sitka's kind of been my home base. I've done two films for the Tongass. The other film was called The Meaning of Wild, and that was in 2014. But it's become this weird kind of second home for me, and because I've done so much work up here, you know, National Geographic and BBC, they'll send me here as the local, which is awesome.
Right.
And I could not be more thankful. I love this place.
And you're saying that in a little bit, people are getting to know you maybe even more than you may like as like the fish photographer guy, right?
Exactly. So
which is cool, but
it is awesome.
Yeah,
no,
right.
my buddies will always tell me, you know, how are the fish? And it's like, we've got another project down on the Elwha we're doing about fish. And then I got hired by the Fish and Wildlife Department to do a project about grayling. Arctic grayling,
which are beautiful, beautiful fish.
Beautiful fish. Again, you know, it's a blessing to be a fish guy, I guess.
Right.
But we do other things, but it's yeah.
When you look at like a future project, like let's say Arctic grayling, and you're going to go probably, I'm guessing, to even colder places. There might be shooting under ice, things like. Do you immediately start thinking about the technical challenges? Do you think about the story first? What is the process about how you develop these films?
It's always the story first. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, I have to say, like, as a business, for us at Pioneer Studios, like, we, you know, we really specialize in impact conservation work. And so that's really our niche. And so we typically are going to talk to a client at the beginning and really try to figure out, like, what is your complex or, you know, difficult story that you're trying to understand and you want to get out to the public? And we wade through that for weeks and months. We do all the pre-interviews over the phone. We really try to get a grasp on that. That's always the first step. And then we're going to say, okay, well, you know, like for example, for the Arctic grayling piece, like there's only like 5 shots of grayling in that. And we bought stock for most of it. It wasn't really about, you know, that's the hard thing. And the fun thing about wildlife filmmaking is like sometimes it's like I always want the best shot. But then you have to think about the story and you're like, is that shot really the thing that's going to like deliver the emotional impact for the audience or not? So
yeah, I guess depending on the project, if the project is about the cultural impact of a fish or a species or something like that, then yes, the species needs to be represented. But really, it's about the culture.
Exactly.
Those kinds of things.
And don't get me wrong, you know, if you're able to ever see the salmon forest, you know, we follow the natural history life cycle and these bears through the entire thread of the film as we meet all the different people. And so, you know, it's just one of those things where sometimes that's the most fun thing to film. But ultimately, you know, like we're telling stories and we're trying to like connect to an audience. And so if that is the way to do it, then we'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the talk is tonight. It's two talks, actually. You get two for the price of one, and it's free for people going anyway. So it's you get two for the price of nothing, which is great. But it'll be Ben Hamilton here, film director, kind of presenting behind the scenes is kind of what you're talking about for the Salmon Forest, 6:30 and 8 o'clock at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. And it sounds like there'll be a little bit of a special showing of the Salmon Forest ahead of time. Is that right?
At 5:15.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at 5:15, if people want to see the full film Salmon Forest, you can doors open at 5 and you can go in, and at 5:15 it'll be shown. And then the Salmon Forest behind the scenes talk will be at 6:30 and at 8 o'clock. Ben, thanks so much for coming in and sharing some of the story with us, and have a great talk tonight.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.